Hello, everyone, and welcome. This is Victoria Stapleton, Director of School and Library Marketing at Little Brown Books for Young Readers, and I'm very pleased to welcome you to the Little Brown School and Library podcast, because this month, our guest is Gidi Daneshvari. She is the supremely talented author of The School of Fear, one of my very favorite series of books for middle grade readers, as it deals with anxieties and phobias of growing up, just in a little bit more extreme fashion. She comes to us again on the Little Brown School list with a brand new series called The League of Unexceptional Children, which our friends at School Library Journal says keeps readers giggling. Welcome, Gidi.
Hello, I'm so excited to talk to you today.
Gidi, can you tell us a little bit about your new series, The League of Unexceptional Children?
Absolutely. Well, the League of Unexceptional Children is a covert network that uses the nation's most average, normal, forgettable, and utterly unexceptional children as spies. Now, why the average kids? Why not the brainiacs, computer science nerds, or the beauty queens, or the jocks? Well, it's simple. People remember them, but not the unexceptionals. They are the forgotten ones, the ones spending their days reintroducing themselves to people they've known since preschool. Why? Because they blend in. They live in the world's blind spot, making them the perfect operatives.
Oh, I love this. I love a good spy story. And I love the concept of hiding in plain sight. I was thoroughly charmed by this book, and one of the things I enjoyed about it is, you know, a lot of times when we talk about a particular novel, the discussion and evaluation turns to world building. For example, you know, the setting or buildings or the mythology of a particular story, and we evaluate the novel in terms of that world building. But I think of you as an amazing character builder, and I'm intrigued. How did you approach constructing believable, interesting characters in this book, particularly as they're supposed to be unremarkable?
Well, first of all, thank you very much. Thank you for the compliment. I appreciate that. Well, it's funny because with School of Fear and with The League of Unexceptional Children, both of these stories and the ideas for these stories were inspired by, like, real-life incidents from my childhood. So where School of Fear, the characters grew out of all the phobias I had as a child. With The League of Unexceptional Children, it came from a story about when I was 10 years old, and they came in and they tested us and they interviewed us to be part of something called the Talented and the Gifted program. And of 25 children, 20 were chosen, and I, of course, was one of the 5 that was not chosen, and I was devastated, and I thought that my life was pretty much over. And so because it comes from this, like, personal story and remember what it felt like to think that I had no options because I wasn't exceptional at the age of 9 or 10. Initially, the characters were like a dimension of myself in a very, like, simplistic way. Shelley and Jonathan were like extensions of me. And that was similar to how I started with School of Fear as well. And then it's just this very tiny kernel that's me. And then as I do the outlining, I always do exercises where I write dialogue that's never going to be included in the book. Because when I'm writing the dialogue and I sort of play with how would the character respond, what would their inner monologue be while they're, you know, outwardly saying this. And so, you know, when I play with that, the characters start kind of developing on their own. And then by the end of the first draft, there's nothing left of me in the characters. But that's sort of the usual progression for me in building the characters. But I do have to admit that with School of Fear, the characters are, they're each very quirky and weird and just unique. And it was definitely a challenge to sort of play. I had to keep that part of me that likes to go really, really absurd. I had to keep that in check when it came to developing Jonathan and Shelley, just because of the constraints of the fact they have to be very unexceptional. However, they can still be a bit odd and peculiar. It's just they couldn't be exceptional in the way that, in the sort of traditional way that society views exceptional children, you know, athletically, you know, linguistically, academically, socially, musically. And so I had to sort of keep them out of those very general categories. Did that answer the question? There was a lot in there.
I think that was a great answer to the question. I really like the idea of you writing those dialogues that are not part of the finished book, just to get into the ease of character and constructing that the voice of each particular character to make sure they're unique and interesting and expressive. I've never really thought about that before as something to do, but it's sort of like what painters do when they do cartoons or character studies.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, it's funny because I almost think of it as like an episode of Seinfeld where it's like they're really talking about nothing. So that's why these are scenes that would never make it into the book. They're not like, they're not action-driven scenes. They're not even necessarily emotional scenes that I need to further the character's arc, but just sort of chit-chat. It's just sort of chit-chat where you get a feel for who someone is and how they would respond, what their sense of humor is, whether they're angry, if they're reactive, if they're quiet, if they have, you know, this dichotomy between what they're thinking and what they're saying. And so for me, it's like the only way to really fully work out the voice. And then once you get that voice in your head and it's strong, then the process of finishing the draft is a million times easier because you're not fighting with, oh, well, would Jonathan say this? Or is that more of a Shelley comment? And that sort of ambiguity is gone. And for me, that ambiguity is what slows me down. And actually, that's not true. That's one of the things that slow me down. The other thing that slows me down is just my poor time management skills. So.
Well, I have to say, you've written a number of novels. I think your time management skills are better than you think they are. But this leads me to a follow up question: do you read these dialogues out loud?
I read everything out loud. So whenever I do school visits, when you get to the end of the school visit, I always like to tell children like a little few like of my tips. And one of the tips is always to read everything out loud. I read the dialogue out loud. I read the book out loud. Because when you read something out loud, you're able to hear it like almost like a reader would. Like, you know, and when you read it and you don't read it and you don't say it out loud, you read it how you want it to be as opposed to how it actually is. So I'm a big believer in reading everything out loud. And you have to read it slowly. You can't speed through it. It can't be like speed reading because you have to really see where the flow is and if it works or if it doesn't work. So I spend a lot of time talking to myself is the bottom line.
Well, I knew you and I were going to hit it off because as my neighbors in the office can tell me, I spend a lot of time talking to myself as well. But this is interesting talking about hearability and audibility and speaking out loud and doing all these character studies because I think that leads us to a little bit of something you've talked about in the roles that kids have inhabited as the class clown or the beauty queen or the brainiac. That's the issue of invisibility and hearability. We live in a time in the lives of many children are structured almost on an hour-by-hour basis with, you know, various classes, but also soccer or dance or mathletes or whatever that is. And they're all expected to perform at a very high level with very high stakes from a very young age, going back to your point about anxiety. But League of Unexceptional Children almost celebrates the luxury of invisibility or anonymity. Can you elaborate on this?
Absolutely. So I think of this book thematically as like part of the anti-Tiger Mom movement, sort of pushing back against this idea that we need to push our children to be exceptional before they've even hit the double digits. Because I think the problem is that, first of all, very few children are born with innate gifts, with, you know, an incredible ear for music or an incredible gift for math. Most children, and I think there's something wrong with it, they have to just figure out slowly through, you know, trial and error, who they are, what they like, and then once they figure out what they like, they have to work very hard at it to, like, hone the ability. And so for me, that is what we should be pushing our children for, is to be open, to be willing to try things, and to be willing to work hard to improve at them. And so, you know, when I see all these kids and, you know, at these school visits and they're going to fencing class and Mandarin Chinese class, I understand where their parents are coming from. They, you know, in an uncertain world, we want to give our children every opportunity possible so that life is less uncertain, so that it's less scary. And I 100% relate to that, especially now that I'm a mother. But I think that we actually we wind up taking away their childhood, and we also stop them from really exploring who they are. And so this book to me is about, like, allowing the children to just sort of live and be who they are and figure out what are they interested in, and then, you know, and then working hard at that. And I don't think there's anything wrong with giving your kids opportunities. I'm not saying that your child should not take part in soccer, you know, or take French lessons. I just think that you have to, you know, stop yourself when you think, you know, about sort of you're building a machine. It's like, no, you're not building a machine where it's like, give them Portuguese and give them this skill and make sure they're taking pre-calculus and send them to, you know, a Swiss, you know, boarding schools. They can learn this. I think it's too much. I think it's like kids also take on your anxiety and this fear that if they don't, you know, get into, you know, if they don't get the right score on their AP calculus test, their lives are over. If they don't get into the right university, I think it's the wrong message for life. And so, so that's sort of thematically how I see it. And especially in New York City, where, you know, there are all these people that you can hire to help, you know, get your child into the right, you know, high school, to get your child into the right university. There's this fear that if you're not going, you know, above and beyond, you're somehow letting your child down. And I think that actually sometimes people are going too far, and I think they're letting them down by pushing them so hard.
Well, clearly,
may not be popular with parents.
There's also in New York the whole competitive preschool thing, which just sort of blows my mind a little bit. But so can you talk a little bit how in League of Unexceptional Characters your characters find creative ways to make their mark outside these boxes of the approved roles? How do Shelley and Jonathan, you know, how do they negotiate that, you know, going their own quiet way? Can you give examples from the book?
Yeah, absolutely. So, well, first, I want to say that the message really of Jonathan and Shelley, because, you know, they're recruited because they're average, you know, to be spies. And, you know, of course, being spies, they suddenly feel special. And they, you know, like, for the first time in their lives, they feel amazing. But they can't tell anyone. And so it's also, there's a message about, like, that you can't, your sense of self can't be based on how you're perceived by others. It has to really come from how you're perceiving yourself. And, you know, there's all these different scenes in the book where Shelley, you know, tells people that they're spies, and of course no one believes them. And it's because a part of her wants everyone to know that, hey, I'm special. You didn't look at me before, but now you should, because I'm a spy, and, you know, and I'm more than you thought I was. And of course no one ever believed her. They still don't remember her. And, you know, ultimately the message is that it's like, well, how does Shelley feel about herself? And then the other way that I think both of them really like make their mark outside of these traditional roles is actually like through humor, is that they both have these sort of like, you know, slightly quirky, but also just, you know, dry ways of approaching, you know, life. You know, Shelley is the child of two very successful scientists and an incredibly bright sister. And, you know, they all taught themselves, you know, German on YouTube and then moved to Germany for this research project. And of course, Shelley was unable to just pick up German over the course of a month. And so she had to stay behind to live with her grandparents. And so she's always felt like, you know, the black sheep of her family because she's not incredibly academic. And Jonathan is the child of two very, I don't want to call them lazy. I would call them deeply unambitious parents who are professional dog walkers who really sort of don't push Jonathan or even give him any guidance in any way. And he feels that that's why he's at a disadvantage in life. And he's sort of just in this middle ground. But the way that both of them deal with their parents and their peers, it are very different. Like Shelley sort of tends to like exaggerate, you know, fib, you know, create these sort of incredible, fantastical versions of herself that aren't accurate. Jonathan can be, you know, somewhat self-deprecating and you know, a bit dry. And his goal in life is to really be as normal and sort of cookie cutter as possible because his parents are not. You know, so his goal in life is to, you know, wear khaki pants and mow his lawn and pay his taxes on time. And in accepting their sort of personality quirks and the way that they've responded to the lives they've, you know, that they've been born into, they realize that they're funny and that they're special and they're different. And it's not about having one skill. That's like, it's just about being them and embracing that. I hope that's not too vague.
Well, I think it's exactly big enough, because one of the things that attracts me to the two-year writing, especially School of Fear, but also now with League of Unexceptional Children, is your books tread that line of a purely middle grade or elementary school book where kids are just figuring out and that you know the world is not arbitrarily the way it is. The world is made because adults decide. They make decisions. And then in a YA novel, characters are figuring out what they want, who they will be, whether they want to throw the baby out with the bathwater or not. And your novels have a great way of depicting the very beginning of that process in a very constructive, interesting manner. And I hope our listeners get that distinction. Your books really are in that seam between the world is the world because other people have power, and the other side of that, the world is the world because I make it so. And I think it's a tremendously interesting place to have a narrative because you see that beginning of those, that mature psychology just get started right there.
First of all, thank you very much. Very kind words. And yeah, I love this age because it is, like you said, you're really on the cusp of embracing your own, like your own ability to have control over your life and to make decisions that will impact how you live and what you do and who you spend time with. And it is, it's definitely a very distinct transition between, like you said, like the world is what it is because that's what your parents tell you it is. And then the moment we go, no, what do I want? But these kids are also, you know, they're just starting off and they're slowly, you know, dipping their toes into the like pool of independence. And it's an exciting time. And it's also the beginning of that journey that, which I mean, somewhat continues forever, but especially into your early 20s of like, who am I? What kind of person do I want to be versus just, you know, who I actually feel like I am. Because there's also the aspirational side to it, whereas Jonathan and Shelley want to be different people and then, you know, and finding that balance between aspiring to be your best self and also just accepting who you are. And I think that's a big part of just growing up. And
you've done it all.
This time period.
And you've done it all with a great sense of humor in a book that does keep readers giggling. As School Library Journal says, I giggled a lot. And Kirkus says the League will appeal to lovers of the ludicrous, which I think is an excellent phrase, but also very apropos for your book. So thank you so very much for joining us today, Giddy. I cannot wait to see what further adventure Shelley and Jonathan get into. Have you already started thinking about their next hijinks?
I am well into the next hijinks, I am very excited about book two and book three. But I'm not into book three yet. I'm in the process with book two, and it's fun. It's like fun to go back into a world that is fully created, and then just sort of continue the adventure. I hope readers enjoy it, and thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me.
Giddy Dhaneshwari, thank you so very much for being our guest on the Little Brown School and Library podcast. Listeners across the universe, do yourselves a favor and check out The League of Unexceptional Children by Giddy Dhaneshwari, and we'll talk to you next time. Thank you. Bye-bye.